This conference is being recorded.
This is Don Hussig with Loving the Earth Pollution Free Rising. And this morning we are speaking with an activist who has a long record in her work to create legislation that would better protect the public from the risks of being exposed to chemicals that cause cancer. Elizabeth Henley lives on Long Island, and that's where her activism has been focused. Could you introduce yourself, Elizabeth?
I'm Elizabeth Henley from Mineola, Long Island. And, I've had an interest in this issue for many years, and over the years tried to do whatever I could to promote legislation that will give consumers information concerning the presence of any carcinogens in products that they buy.
You've been an activist for so long, and I'm sure it's just something that means so very much to you. How did you come to have an interest in this work?
Well, when I was a child, I guess around 12 years old, my cousin, who was 8, was diagnosed with leukemia, and she died within a year of the diagnosis, and it just left a lasting impression on me because I wanted to know why. It just didn't seem right, of course, that someone 8 years old would be given a death sentence. And of course, they've done a lot with leukemia over the years, which is wonderful. The outcomes are much better now. But when someone gets cancer, I think we should really be asking ourselves what happened and why did this happen. And then years later, an aunt of mine died of breast cancer, which was a terrible tragedy. She was a single mom, and she left the child, my cousin Linda. And I just never forgot that. And so this is what motivated me. I still feel bad about it to this day.
Did anything ever, was anyone ever able to discover anything that could possibly have been the cause of the little girl's cancer?
No, but, we couldn't, no one investigated that, obviously, but I don't know myself. I mean, all you can do is speculate. Years later, I found out that the area where they lived in was near the Brooklyn Navy Yard. There was some contamination around that area, I really don't know.
Right.
But since then, I've discovered that we are bombarded with so many carcinogens in our environment that the best we could do is to try to avoid them.
Exactly. You brought a lawsuit against the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, and this action involved cancer prevention information that was being withheld from the consumers by the FDA. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, while I was in law school, I had to do a research paper for a course, scientific evidence, as a writing requirement, and I chose to do it on the oral contraceptives, estrogen and breast cancer. I had read something in Public Citizen and called my attention to it, and I had also read a pamphlet that was published by the National Cancer Institute, which in 1990, I think it was, which advised consumers at that time that the best way to prevent cancer is to avoid exposure to known carcinogens, and they really highlighted the importance of animal studies in being able to know what things to avoid. And I brought the suit against the FDA because they eliminated a warning on oral contraceptives, which would have informed women that estrogen was known to cause cancer in animals, and which justified the inference that it could cause cancer in humans. And I thought that warning should have remained, that women had the right to know that, who were using oral contraceptives. And that was the basis for the suit. And also signed on to the suit was a 1 in 9 Long Island Breast Cancer Coalition. And So basically, I was challenging the FDA. There is a statute in the Administrative Procedure Act that gives consumers the right to request a rule change, and that's what I did.
How'd it go?
So I'm looking for that pamphlet I had, which was really good.
And this is from NCI?
Yeah, in fact, I cited their own pamphlet in the lawsuit,
okay.
You know, because they do stress the importance of informing consumers and of the importance of people keeping away from substances that we know cause cancer in animals, and that was the basis for the lawsuit. I did not, they denied the lawsuit initially, you know, in the when I made the application. And then they mistakenly told me the reason for denying the petition for a rule change was that estrogen was no longer known to cause cancer in animals, which is ridiculous. And then when I appealed that, they admitted their mistake, and but they still denied the petition. So then I appealed it to the Circuit Court of Appeals, and which also sided with the FDA, and then to the U.S. Court of Appeals, who also sided with the FDA, because I would have had to prove their decision to deny my petition was arbitrary and capricious, and it's a very high standard, but I think I made it, but they disagreed. But they did agree that if the U.S. Court of Appeals did say in their decision that if it was their decision, they might have, you know, sided. If it was their decision to make, they kind of agreed with my reasoning, but the decision was not theirs, it was the FDA's.
I see. Yeah, it's too bad there are so many ways that government can avoid doing what the science would cause one to do. I'm sure that the reason FDA did that was just because they wanted not to offend whoever it was that was selling the birth control product. They just wanted to keep a better relationship with them than just act upon the science that it's really their job to act upon.
Well, it seems... Go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, I'm just going to say it was so good that there are people like you out there that would, you know, think about these things, and considering the protection of the public health that would be, you know, involved in that warning being on there, that you would take action and try to, you know, at least try to, you know, get it right and you know, properly done based on the science and the public health protection.
Well, the mindset seems to be that you do, even though they know something causes cancer in animals, they don't want to say that it's a cause. They don't want to inform the people until they get conclusive epidemiological evidence, which means that basically they're testing things on the public.
Exactly.
And in the case of the oral contraceptives, there were conflicting studies. They were, at the time I made the suit, there was a conflict between the studies. Some showed a connection, some didn't, and they felt that they didn't, that meant if there's no conclusive proof, you know, we can't say that it's not safe. But my argument was that women should know have all the information so that they can decide whether or not they want to wait for the conclusive proof.
Exactly.
You know, they would want, I think many women would want to avoid something where there was a question as to whether or not it causes cancer. You know, that mindset that we have to wait for conclusive epidemiological evidence, it to me is ridiculous. And
it's
I think
ridiculous.
We have a right to know. We have a right to know as consumers what we, you know, if there's any kind of risk of cancer. And I think animal study evidence is, it would certainly affect my decision whether or not to use a product.
It's that's the way it has started with so much of the knowledge about chemicals that cause cancer. They start with the animal studies. That's why they start focusing then on the human epidemiological studies. And like you say, the problem with the human epi studies is that then the people are just being exposed and caused to get sick as just as this matter of letting this take the worst effect it could possibly take rather than a precaution and with concern for just avoiding something that's likely to cause cancer, to cause cancer in animals, and many times those chemicals also end up causing cancer in humans. It's perfectly reasonable and rational and logical to, you know, argue what you argue. I certain that the only, I'm sure the FDA and the courts understand the logic of that, but they truly do represent more than just, you know, the public interest. They represent these corporations that sell chemicals that cause cancer and sell products that contain either inadvertently or deliberately chemicals that are either known to cause cancer in animals or are also known to cause cancer in animals and humans. It's say, for example, with our work on these contaminants in animal fed, the U.S. government, FDA, EPA, NCI, National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, all these various government health agencies, they are well aware of the fact that dioxins and dioxinoid compounds and PBDEs and these perfluorinated compounds are contaminants of foods. In the case of those, that first group, all of them other than the fluorinated compounds, they're contaminants of animal fat. So they're present in so many of the foods that we consume. And there are epidemiological studies that show that dioxin causes cancer in humans. They've assessed how much cancer is imposed. So much of the science is done, and yet we still see government hesitating to educate about this. There's very, very little education. New York State Department of Health does not one word of education on dioxins in foods like eggs and cheese and beef and pork and fish and poultry. They stated to us that they did not want to tell the public this. We've had people in the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention state to our organization that the CDC does not want to offend the animal producers. So much of this is politics and money, not science and public health protection. You had a law that you have long advocated for and that you continue to advocate for. The labeling of consumer products and foods is such an important part of cancer prevention education, and you have been advocating for a green labeling law here in New York State. What would the green labeling law require?
Well, there already isn't such a law in California. They're the only state that has a law that mandates that consumers be informed when they're being exposed to a product, chemical, or in a product that they purchase that's been known to cause cancer. And that law has been in effect in California, I think, since 1986. And really, that it needs to be passed on a federal level to be more effective. But I tried at one point to have it addressed in the state of New York, and a local politician was able to get it. I ran for assembly on the Green Party ticket and on this issue, and I participated in a debate, and months later, a local politician called and said she'd heard the debate, and she was able to get it introduced into the New York State Assembly, which we were thrilled about. But it never went anywhere. It just stayed in the, in the committee. And I believe it was Assemblyman Levy who introduced it. It's a really good law, and it really, you know, focuses on the public's right to know when they're being exposed to a product that contains a carcinogen or something that's toxic. And it hasn't gone anywhere. But it's really something that we need, because that's the way the free market system was meant to work, that people, the whole philosophy behind the free market system is that consumers will make rational choices in the marketplace, that they'll choose the best product, and that would help eliminate inferior or dangerous products. Right. And but you can't do that unless you have the information necessary to make an informed choice. And that's all this law would do. It would just give information to people, and people, you know, would be able to decide which product to purchase, and it would also stimulate manufacturers to put safer products on the market and thereby gradually eliminate these carcinogens from the marketplace. And we're not going to get anywhere with stopping, reversing the cancer epidemic without reducing carcinogens that we're exposed to.
Would the green labeling law cover both labeling of, say, consumer products and foods?
I think that the one in California does cover foods, some foods, but I'm not entirely sure what the case law says on that. But that's why I think on a federal level, obviously, it wouldn't conflict with any federal regulations, and it would be more effective. But even
I totally agree with you. These things that we find will be good for New Yorkers would be just as good for everybody else in the U.S. And to have the federal law, it seems like so many times there is this thing of top-down government where the states are just so used to taking direction from the federal government. In these matters of great importance, such as protecting the public health, it probably would be just as well to have this more uniform, more kind of widespread kind of legislation that, you know, will be on the federal level. So I totally agree with you about that. We're hoping that we can also accomplish something along the lines of your bill there, that green labeling is just right at the very heart of cancer prevention education, because it's providing information to people about what causes cancer. And we've been looking at this from just another angle and are thinking that there's so much science being published about certain pollutant carcinogens like dioxins and the PBDEs and some pesticides that are carcinogenic. And we just feel that once the science has been published to the extent that there's this knowledge about the cancer being caused in animals, and then maybe some epidemiology, and then even in some cases, like with dioxins, the risk assessments of how much cancer is caused by how much dioxin exposure, and then they studied how much exposure the average American receives. So much knowledge exists. We feel there should be some system in place, which would be based on legislation, that would require some part of government to review the science and then create the message that was this prevention message for the public, and then say some other part of government, say the state governments, their health departments, would then be responsible for bringing that message before the public in numerous ways, because it really does take a lot of messages and a lot of repetition, a lot of coverage to change people's behaviors.
Well, you know, it also, I'm sure we spend a lot of money investigating, testing animals and doing all these studies to see what causes cancer. In fact, I'm holding in my hand a 10th report on carcinogens, which was published in 2002 by the Department of Health and Human Services. And it's a pretty thick volume listing known carcinogens. And, you know, this is information that we have that needs to get out to the public. So we already have the information. All we have to do is make it available to the public, more readily available. And it's a waste. I mean, to have all this information and not use it, to me, it's really a terrible injustice to the public.
I'm starting to have more and more kind of hopes and more truly respect and honor of government recently. I used to be this kind of person that felt that we were just being really cheated and that we weren't represented. But we just kept persevering, and I think that's important. We persevered. We have brought this idea of the cancer prevention education that focuses on reducing exposure to pollution. We brought that before the New York State legislature, you know, contacting the chair of the health committee, Assemblymember Gottfried, and that's in the assembly, the chair of the health committee, and also the chair of the health committee in the Senate. It used to be Senator Marcelino, and now it's Senator Duane. We just did that for years. And nothing happened. They just would listen to us. We'd get into Albany and make our presentation on the science of dioxin exposure and cancer risk. And they would just never do anything. And then we just, you know, just kept trying. And we continued to do that. But we also started lobbying right the very most representative, you know, the closest home that we could get. And we started lobbying our town boards for resolutions and also our village councils for resolutions that would show support for this kind of education being done. And then we just got in touch with our own, you know, kind of our closest to home member of the New York State Legislature, our assembly member. And she has now agreed, and we're just keeping our fingers crossed, and we're just so delighted with this, she's now agreed that the steps are being taken. There's now a bill being drafted in Albany that would provide for this cancer prevention education with a focus on reducing exposure to pollution that causes cancer. So we're just so happy to see that our system does work and that this perseverance is necessary. Because really, if an idea like that idea of the green labeling law, that is so sound and so good for everyone, I have no doubt that that will eventually come to be a law in the U.S. And it truly is, there are obstacles to be overcome with this matter of, say, the chemical industry and the manufacturing industry and some of these, and even the animal foods production and distributing industries. They have concerns about experiencing temporary losses due to changes that take place in the economy, and these laws would certainly bring changes. But they will just have to, you know, just eventually accept the fact that the science gets done, the public needs to be protected, their health needs to be protected, we don't want to always suffer this much cancer burden, and that the science needs to be used, and what you're arguing for and what we're arguing for and hoping will become a new reality. Will become a new reality in time, I'm sure.
Well, I think it's wonderful that the work you're doing, because there's no more important laws than those that protect public health and safety and life. And that has to be a top priority of our legislators. And I admire the work you're doing. And I think that it will happen if everybody, in whatever way we can, tries to do what they can as individuals and
exactly. And
collectively. So I have hope, but there seems to be a big problem with the corporate, especially with the new Supreme Court decision, with corporations having a bigger voice than the people. And if this is going to remain a government by the people, for the people, that's really a great danger to our democracy. So this is something the laws that affect health and safety, I think, have to take priority.
I agree with you 100%. And maybe we'll be fortunate enough to have one of these laws that, you know, are so necessary to get going, and then maybe somehow, and corporations trying to interfere with that or damage the result of that, or, you know, whatever they do with their new power, maybe that could be, you know, another lawsuit where that new power would get, you know, taken away from them, because they certainly don't deserve it.
No, I don't think that's the way the government was meant to work.
I know.
It just doesn't make corporations don't get to vote. They're not people, and like I said, if this is a government of the people, by the people, rather than by corporations, for corporations, that has to change. But I don't think there's anybody who hasn't been affected but has known someone who has cancer. And I used to go out and, like, table on this issue with the petitions, and I never had anyone say they didn't want to sign the petition. Everyone was in agreement that this is a good law. So I wish someone would run for office on this issue, and I know that people will respond, because it's such an important issue.
Well, sounds like you have a lot of good excitement and a lot of good positive thinking and energy for, you know, helping to bring this about. And good luck with all your efforts, and thanks for everything you've accomplished so far. You know, it's certainly a good record for, you know, the human race, that there are people that encounter these cancer problems, these awful things that happen to, you know, people, and then does something creative and productive in trying to just bring the changes so that this will not happen in the future. Thanks, Elizabeth.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Doug. Bye.
It's been a really great interviewing you. Bye.
Thank you.